Hey, Mom, you got anything to serve these people at the bar? They've been buying drinks all night. I want to give them something to eat, a freebie.
Well, we're out of fish fry. All I got are some chicken scraps we were going to throw out. Can't serve them because it's still Friday. But at the stroke of midnight...
Well, what are you going to make?
I don't know. Maybe I'll fry up the wings, add some hot sauce. I'll put some celery on the side with blue cheese dressing. Who knows? Maybe they'll like it.
People did like what Teresa Bellissimo served at the Anchor Bar that night in 1964. And within weeks, chicken wings became a sensation across Buffalo. Now they're a favorite around the world. It's part of our heritage in Buffalo, Western New York, and the Niagara Peninsula from the NFHP and this station.
From the struggling studios in Buffalo, New York, it's the Struggle Is Real Buffalo Music Podcast.
Welcome to the Struggle Is Real Buffalo Music Podcast, where we talk about the good, the bad, and the funny of being a DIY musician in the 716. I'm Ryan Gurnett, and my parents aren't home. I know where they keep the liquor.
Do you think your dad would mind if we took just a little?
We'll replace it with water.
That always works.
This bit's gone on too long.
I'm gonna move on. And I'm Dennis Reed, friend of the poor.
Today we have an interview with a gentleman that many of you will know, Mr. Ken Rutkowski, who owns the legendary Outer Limit Recording Studio on Walden Avenue in Buffalo. He has worked with Eminem, D12, and countless Western New York musicians, including myself, in his storied 23-year career.
Yeah, and also in this episode, this is kind of news to Ryan, but we're going to have a new segment, something we're calling the Guitar Center Minute. And it's not a sponsored segment, it's just a random one-minute sample of the inimitable oral ambiance that floods the ears when one walks into that establishment. Ryan, did you know Guitar Center has been called the hot topic of divorced guitarists? Need a Fender guitar stool for your hemorrhoids? They got it, soft. Plush on the top. Later in the program, we're going to settle the gun debate, if we have time. And Ryan, you had a segment for today too, I believe.
Yes, today we are going to play Real Not Real Recording Studio Edition.
In honor of our interview with Ken Rutkowski coming up?
Absolutely. We talked to Ken a little bit about some of the weird stuff he's seen too.
Recently, Ryan and I, in our band, The Lady or the Tiger, we played at Hot Mama's Canteen on 217. And that was fun. I love playing at Hot Mama's. There's really nice people all through there. The bartender, the owner, like everybody that I've met. I was a little bit perturbed though when I got there. I'd actually kind of planned on doing two piano songs at the end of the night because they have a piano that's sitting right there and it's all mic'd up and everything. And did you see the piano was locked?
Yes, I did. Did you ask them to unlock the
piano? No, I didn't. But
there
was like a padlock. But what happened? I mean, was there just people like being drunks who were like pounding on it or something?
Think about how many drunk people you've seen pick up drumsticks or a guitar. You can't have a bar with that proximity to an open piano. Bad things are going to happen.
Annoying people and stuff in the stand. Well, and maybe bad things to the piano too, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I know. I wasn't that invested in doing the extra songs that I wanted to actually go bug staff for it then. I kind of had my doubts about it anyways, but...
Mohawk Place has a piano, too, and I bet if you jumped on that thing, it's off to the right. This guy, I can't remember his first name. His last name's Conrad. He does, like, a happy hour where he plays, like, some, like, ragtimey, jazzy kind of stuff.
Oh, neat.
And I bet if you got anywhere near that piano, someone would, like, tackle you.
Yeah, you'd be jumped immediately. So you got to keep the piano safe.
Exactly.
In the bar. Well, anyways, I had awesome chicken fingers that night. First time I actually sampled the Hot Mama's food.
Oh, I had the chicken fingers, and I had the barbecue wings were just amazing.
Oh, nice. Well, as decadent as I could get would be the chicken fingers, but I'm sure the wings are great. Yeah, the only thing I kind of don't like about Hot Mama is it's kind of a weird space to play in. Like, you've got the way the band's set up, for those of you who have been there know, but the band's set up facing the bar, this narrow corridor of the bar. To your right is this entire, like, at a 90-degree angle, you know, from the performer's perspective, is all the seating for where people dine and have their suppers. There's a bunch of tables up there. I'm always divided between the left. I actually swung a speaker around, like, halfway through our show just so the people behind us could hear a direct feed. A little bit. Did you feel it was awkward at all? Who were you looking at?
I was looking at the bar, or, like, a little bit of the bar, and then a big beam where people can't see us.
Right.
But then you actually had me rotate to face the crowd for about the second half of our second set, and I was making eye contact with the people there while you guys played off into nothingness.
We're, like, staring at the backs of people at the bar.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably a bad idea.
The backs of people who were very specifically not listening.
Right, very intently not listening. No, that's not true. During our first song, if you recall, two people came out, and I think they may have been swing dancing.
Yes,
to our song. Yeah, so I got, and maybe this isn't a thing, and maybe I'm paranoid, but I got the feeling that when they came out there, that it was sarcastic dancing. That they were dancing to us sarcastically. Like, I didn't feel good about, like, oh, we're making people rock. Because it was, like, literally, like, they were, like, if we had launched into a polka, they were going to come out and do that exact swing dancing. That's the way I felt when
it came
out. I
think you're underestimating the effectiveness of your songwriting, Dennis.
You know, it is, like, the can't go wrong 1-4-5 kind of progression in that
song. Oh, yeah.
Song.
I bet if our follow-up song sounded like that, they would have danced more.
You know what? Listen, I'm gonna try to take a sunny view of
yes,
things
today.
And that's very possible. But nice to see some people out. They give us drink tickets there, which is always a weird thing, because I always, you know, and you gotta, like, count up, like, how many is per the beer. And it's not just one, I thought it was one ticket, one beer the first time we played there. And she handed me, like, 30 tickets. I'm like, fuck yes, like, this is gonna be a great night. And actually, apologies to Hot Mama if they're listening, but I did pay for my first two, totally thinking it was one ticket, one beer. And I think I just ran away from the bar before the bartender could correct me. So just laid down a ticket and, you know, thanks for the $9 beer. And, like, you know, turned around and ran away. This time I got hip to it, though. It was three tickets. And you probably didn't use yours at all, did you?
I got my wife some drinks.
Oh, okay, you did. Okay. I wasn't sure.
She went to the bar. She wasn't allowed to use the tickets. So then I had to go to the bar and order exactly what she ordered and then carry it to her.
Right. So we did have one guy hang around to the end of the night at our
I did see
Lady
that.
In the Tiger show.
Talking with him.
Yeah, yeah, I had to, like,
a friend.
He was like, he was like the only person looking at us for, like, the last 20 minutes. Wonderful gentleman, kind of looked like Maurice Gibb a little bit, had like a paisley kind of shirt, you know, sort of fashionable older gentleman.
Just staying alive.
This sort of individual, just staying alive. And, you know, he was hanging out, so yeah, I went and said hi, and I think he chucked a couple bucks in the tip jar too, which is pretty awesome. So thanks, anyways, to everybody at Hot Mama's Canteen for having us. And
yeah,
for coming out.
The wait staff and the bartenders there are always so nice. Like,
yeah.
I like playing there outside of not knowing where to face.
So what's happening with the scene, Ryan? There's all kinds of cool shit coming up.
Yeah.
I know you've been very busy on the internet.
Yes. So
figuring out what's happening.
Yes. So for I'm just going to remind people now to check out our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/thestruggleisrealpodcast.
What can they find there?
They can find funny videos. They can find information about some of our past guests, some of our future guests. You can find links to all of our episodes.
Yes. The whole Struggle is Real universe.
Yes, absolutely.
There at your fingertips.
I also post a lot of upcoming shows on there, and we started doing Spotify playlists.
Yeah, those are awesome.
So, you know, as I've been finding out doing reviews for all of Western New York radio, there's a ton of really good music coming into town. But
yeah,
I mean, typically, you know, there's no MTV anymore. Like, I don't have a way to find bands. So I don't know what's coming. Like, most of these bands I go out to see, I've never seen before. I've never really even heard much of their music, and I'm always wowed by them. So I decided to make a playlist so you can check out, you know, what I think is the best of some of this upcoming music coming to town.
Yeah, so this is all on Spotify. Like, you found awesome local music, and you put it into a Spotify playlist.
Oh, no. Well, there's two playlists. One, I'm going to be featuring local bands every month. I'm going to try and do seven local bands. And then there's a second one, which is all out-of-town bands that will be
coming
playing
for local
in
shows.
Buffalo.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Gotcha. Awesome.
Saw a great band called Wild Rivers
at
Mohawk Place on Saturday. They were kind of a mix of country, soul, Americana, and folk.
Nice.
And
I mean, I don't know about the folk, but...
No, it worked. It worked. And they were a four-piece band, and the two fronting the band, they had a bass player slash vocalist named Devin and Khalid, who played guitar and vocals, and the way their voices blended together...
Oh, nice.
...was just fantastic.
Original music, or were they doing covers?
Yes, original. No, oh. I'm not doing covers.
Thank God.
No, it was a really nice, intimate set. The crowd was really into it. People were singing along, and, you know, for a smaller-ish band, you're not used to, like... You know, people jumping in front of you being like, oh my God, take my picture with them. So, like,
right.
The crowd was really into it and had a great night. And
Wild Rivers?
Wild Rivers, yeah.
Cool.
They almost kind of remind me of, like, Canadian of Monsters and Men, perhaps, a little
okay.
bit.
Okay, all right.
They put on a great show.
Flannel.
And I also saw a local band I'm super excited about called Mutual Friends.
Mm-hmm. You're telling me about them a little bit before we...
Yeah, they kind of reminded me of Death Cab for Cutie and Bright Eyes with kind of... They had a lot of synthesizer, so it had kind of like a new wave kind of twist on it. And while it was kind of like felt moody and atmospheric at mm-hmm. times, at the same time it was almost kind of like upbeat and dancey.
Okay. Did they have like full rock drummer or
yep.
did they have... Okay.
Well, he had a really abbreviated kit. It was... I forget what cymbals he had, but he just had kick, snare, and floor tom.
No rototoms at all?
Oh, thank God, no. No cowbell, no woodblock, no wind chimes. He could have had a gong. That would have been okay. But
no electronic components?
No, nothing like
kit?
That.
Okay.
Oh, thank God. And just the sound from his drum set, it was huge. Like, his kick drum was one of the biggest ones I've ever seen on stage. Like,
yeah.
I don't think it was made to even, like, have a mounted tom on it. Like, it doesn't have that T in the middle. I don't even know if it'd be sturdy.
Was like, it supposed to be, like, a marching band drum or something?
It might have been getting close.
Yeah.
But, like, he just, with this tiny little drum set, between that and, like, the synthesizer, just managed to make so much noise. Like, you could have told me that there were two drummers playing there, mm-hmm. and I might have believed you. So, it was a really cool, big noise. And the bass player had this nice, chunky bass tone, reminded me of Death Cab. I mean, really,
yeah.
the way they interacted, like, they were there, the drummer and the bassist were just so tight. It was real cool. The guitar player kind of reminded me of Johnny Marr from The Smiths
mm-hmm.
and Modest Mouse. And, the singer kind of had at times, like, a bright-eyesy kind of sound to his voice, and he looked just like Elvis Costello.
Did he drink 33 consecutive beers out of red Solo cups on stage like Bright Eyes' Conor Oberst did when I saw him in Buffalo in 2005?
33?
About that. I think everybody lost count that night.
Oh, Conor. I did a post
on... Conor, where did we go wrong?
I did a post on him, and the last time he came to town, and everyone was worried about him, and people were quitting his band and stuff.
Yeah.
That was... I don't know if you remember that. That was pretty crazy. So I'm loading up the list of shows, so I don't know if we want to stop or you can just keep rambling. Or, Dennis, you can talk about the show we're going to be at.
Actually, Ryan and I are going to pal up and meet up and go out to Mohawk Place to see a pretty promising-looking bill. It's going to be Cooper the Band, which I believe is actually, you say Cooper the Band,
yes.
right?
Actually, Avid's the same way. They are Avid the Band.
Yeah, I saw Avid the Band too, and then in some other copy I looked at earlier. But yeah, Avid the Band, and I think I keep seeing the other one listed as Urban Planning, but I couldn't find an Urban Planning website for a Buffalo band, but I did find Urban Reverie. So I wonder if it's them and that there's a typo in the...
That's a pretty amazing typo if it is.
Well,
something I found,
not a typo, but
I found
Urban Planning stuff?
No, I've actually found a couple bands that come to town or are playing shows. They just don't have websites.
Right, right. Okay, so yeah, maybe I just have, overlooked them. But anyways, we're going to head out to that. And I'm going to be bringing my camera out there, so expect some photos, provided I don't dribble caged alpha monkey on my Canon 5D.
And
as I usually do when I go out and take pictures.
And if you want to come swing by, we will probably be the oldest people there. I'm
right.
assuming outside.
Yeah,
if some dads bring their kids, we might be the same age.
Look for the walker and the hearing aid.
We're both about 5'4".
Look for the walker and the bald head.
Yes, yes. The shine from Dennis's head can be seen anywhere within Mohawk Place. But yeah, come by, say hi, get a picture taken. Come talk to us, like we're people.
Yeah,
I mean, Dennis
nice.
More than me, but
yeah.
you know we are.
Yeah, but we both clean up nice.
We're talking about...
And what's the date on that show? I'm sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no, that's sorry. The date on that show is March 5th.
That's March 5th. Okay.
Yes.
Yep.
And that's Mohawk Place. Then on two consecutive nights at Town Ballroom, you have Lights, She is like a solo singer.
Mm-hmm.
She's
I checked her out a little bit online.
Very, very, very poppy.
Yes.
Also seems a lot of fun. After that, we have Joy Wave, who kind of has like a modern indie rock, kind of mm-hmm. little bit, kind of jangly kind of feel to it.
Yes, that's my bread and butter right there.
We have a local show with Johnny the Man Kids and the Orange Friction. That's at Mohawk Place on March 11th. Johnny and the Man Kids will be featured in this coming month's Spotify playlist for bands, so you can listen to them there.
Great.
Just, you know, alt rock general. They seem like there'll be a lot of fun.
Great.
March 12th at Mohawk, there is a band called Zucci. They're kind of like a jam bandy, kind of loose.
Oh, yeah, it sounds jam bandy now that you mention
with
it.
With like a folk singer twist, and they're from Rochester.
Oh, Zucci.
They've only got one song online. It's called Matador. I thought it was pretty cool. It's got, mm-hmm. got some nice rhythm to it. Kay Flay is playing at Town Ballroom on March 13th. She's kind of more of a pop star. I think she writes a lot of her own material, too. She's got some really cool stuff.
Okay.
And just two more I'm going to talk about real quick. One is on March 20th at the Town Ballroom, Atmosphere, who is a rapper who I've never heard of.
Okay.
And I was completely blown away by his stuff. He kind of has a Macklemore kind of sound. I know you're not big into hip-hop,
but
he kind of had that sound to him. And there aren't a lot of like big hip-hop shows that I know of in Buffalo, and that seems like it'd be a good one.
Dare I ask, good sir, who his hype man beeth?
Oh, man, I don't know. Dennis, it could be you.
Does he not have a hype man? Is he looking?
He might not. I haven't seen him live.
What?
It's
what?
Not like it's not listed like a roster like on a sports team. So
what? 2004?
Sorta in the house, maybe. Mohawk Place on March 21st. There is Jake Bellissimo and Hustlonia. Hustlonia is a local band that is a band, an artist, and a cult that are owned by a local soap company.
Okay.
They make.
Somehow I'm with you so far.
I don't understand it. Their music is spacey and kind of fun and actually really interesting to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is Jake Bellissimo, who is a guitarist and singer. So there's a lot of cool stuff coming. Stay tuned to the Facebook page. We post about the stuff on the Twitter page, too.
Yep.
And you can keep an eye on reviews from me at allwnyradio.com.
Hey, Lee.
Hi.
Hi.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
Did someone hurt you?
No. Why did you guys break through my window?
The door's been locked all day!
Jeff, don't. Don't let your trip on Lee. Lee likes to dictate the pace and tempo of every conversation.
Don't tell me about Lee. I know more about Lee than you do. Lee likes mashed potatoes, not french fries.
Oh, listen to you. Lee likes mashed potatoes, not french fries. Anybody like Lee doesn't want to hear your opinion.
What did you just say? Aha!
What? I didn't.
Anybody like Lee? There's nobody like Lee.
That is so funny. You think there's a million Lees out there?
That is so rich.
Okay, let's ask Lee.
Lee,
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 Lee, Lee,
Lee, Lee,
Lee, Lee,
Lee,
Lee,
Lee,
Lee,
Lee,
Lee,
Lee.
All right, we're back here on The Struggle is Real. And one of our favorite segments to play is Real Not Real.
That's right.
Where I am going to give Dennis some facts, some things that have happened to me, some stories, and he's going to have to guess if they are real or fake. And in honor of guest Ken Rutkowski, this is Real Not Real Recording Studio Edition. So these are either going to be bands that I've recorded or me being in a studio recording. So Mike can go either way, but these are things that I've personally experienced.
Right, so it's either things you've experienced or things that you're just making up and you're trying to trick me into thinking
exactly.
You experienced. So this is really a lot like, I've got a lot of practice for this game because most of the time hanging out with you, being in a band together and everything, is trying to figure out, you know, the 50% of complete and utter pathological lies that come out of your mouth and the 50% of real nuggets of information. So I feel pretty well prepared.
The fact that you think it's 50% tells me I'm doing a great job. All right. Cue the music. So first one. Speed punk band Sugar Eater asked if they could pay by check. We told them yes. Then they offered to pay with a combination of Valium and vodka. Real or not real?
Well, let's see. There's no conspicuous telltale signs, so I'm going to say it's real.
It is not real.
Ooh.
I will tell you, I once worked with the worst band I ever worked with, and they offered to pay us in cocaine once.
Yeah, okay.
Somewhere, but not
yeah,
the same.
Yeah, see? All right.
All right.
I have to dial in. Hold on. Let me access Ryan here. I have to be the Ryan
bit
a little bit.
Feel it. You got to find out where all this rage and animosity
I'm hunching from. Down and making myself 3 inches shorter right now. And my voice is going up.
Oh, I'm going to punch you in the fucking face.
Here we go.
God damn it.
Here.
All right. When Ryan recorded for the first time, it was at Outer Limit Recording Studio. According to our saxophone player, as soon as we started playing the first song, Ken Rakowski and it was his partner Craig? Do you remember what his
name? I don't remember what his
and
name
his
was.
Partner were both there, and they looked at each other, and then one of them shrugged and said, "Eh, nothing new."
Oh no, that is brutal and specific, and I'm going to say that's real.
Yes, that is absolutely real.
what a terrible story.
It's okay.
Oh my goodness.
You know what?
I would have been. I don't know. I think I would have been devastated.
We were literally copying.
Like the
Hendrix
Mighty
song.
Boss?
Oh. Purple Rain. No, not Purple Rain.
Purple Haze.
Purple Haze, yeah. That's basically what the first song we recorded was basically that chord and like an A.
Still, but, you know, like their big time like movie producer, like, bring the kid in here, you know, with the cigar. And then you get up, you play something, he's like, I've seen it. This town is littered with, tramps like these guys. You know, a little bit rough.
The town was littered with tramps like us, actually. So the second album I ever recorded is called Assorted Solos of a Funk-Ass Mofo Origin. It was recorded in North Collins in a farm that had a llama, a peacock, a one-ton pig named Hambone, and a turkey named Tonto.
As likely as this sounds, I can just see you having way too much fun coming up with the name, so I'm going to say not real.
It is absolutely real.
Stop.
I don't know.
I'm going to need some documentation for this one.
I can tell you, the name of the album came from a lyric sheet that we had for one of the songs, and at the very end it was just jamming, and someone wrote Assorted Solos of a Funk-Ass Mofo Origin, so that was why we named the album that.
I love it.
And it was recorded in North Collins. I think they still record up there. We called it Doolittle Studios because it was on a farm, and they had all these crazy animals.
All right. I'm not doing that great.
You got time.
Okay, hold on.
Let
me get there.
God, I fucking hate you. After a long day...
And yet you're inextricably bound to me.
Yes, I am. Damn it. You're like my wife. After a long day of recording a particularly good-looking pianist, Ryan found that he had some small audio clips of her moaning in frustration. Never missing an opportunity, I set the moan to music and made the Amy Moan Dance remix.
They're going to say made sweet love to the recording. That I would believe... But this, I believe that you're, I think this is true. I think it's a true story.
It is absolutely true.
All right.
I recorded a pop punk band that later became known as the Renowned Army. They were a group of 16-year-olds who insisted that for absolutely no reason whatsoever that someone be put at the beginning of the CD saying, if you shoot Comrade Stalin, you shoot yourself.
Some of the CDs I've recorded, there is sometimes a penchant to make that important political statement or to use. I think we use some some found tape from a self-help guru for one Orange Sunshine album with a gentleman just intoning, sit comfortably in your chair and close your eyes as you begin the technique. And then, you know, went into it. It's a thing you do. So I'm going to say it's true.
It is absolutely true.
All right. Ding.
And,
do the ding.
And that same song, he couldn't find a word to rhyme with lonely, so he used homie.
Okay,
why
fair
not?
Enough.
Why not? Nothing else rhymes with that. All right.
Bonely.
Only, right there.
Yeah, you could. Okay. That would probably work. Yeah.
I mean, baloney is really a better rhyme than throwing the word homie in there.
Yeah, it's closer, but maybe comes up less. Well, I don't know. Baloney comes up more in my life than homie, personally.
Aw, I'm sorry. While recording the band The Pink Hearse Paparazzi Project, Ryan jokingly suggested that the guys squeeze their testicles to hit the high notes. Taking the joke way too far, the rest of the album's vocal tracks were recorded with the vocalist going pantless and putting his hands on his nuts.
I can't live in a world where that's true. I'm going to say untrue.
That is untrue.
Oh, thank you. And even if it's true, lie to me. That it's never happened.
I'm not going to say I haven't done that myself for some
background. You've tried to squeeze to get up there?
I jokingly tried. I never did it, assuming it was
you
going
never
to
squeeze,
work.
Like, okay.
But
okay.
I was doing it for the joke. And,
okay, gotcha.
You know. All right.
You didn't think it was actually a way to achieve higher
levels? No. Okay. I don't. I'm not crazy.
Okay. Well, you know.
All right. The Amazing Plaid track, This Is Hip, includes subliminal dialogue, including the line, "All I wanted was a watermelon. I just wanted a watermelon, and you bought me a fucking pumpkin. A pumpkin."
So this is Amazing Plaid.
Yes, it's a band I was in college.
I do remember you talking about Amazing Plaid.
College recording studio time, which is really the best time to shit around and get nonsense.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not paying for it. Right. I mean, you're paying a tuition, but you know.
Mm-hmm. But it's pretty much free recording time. And where was this band?
This band was in Albany.
So was it kind of like up? So that's like, well, it's downstate from us, but it's like rural, or is it like Albany City?
Albany City.
Okay, it's not like outside in like a suburb or something.
Nope.
So there's not a lot of vegetation around, but you guys are, I know you at least are a big Zappa fan, and you like that kind of absurd kind of, you know, like barking pumpkin, fucking spider, you know, all the stuff that Zappa does. He's very interested in like vegetables and stuff, you know, some of the sort of surreal lyrics, so I'm going to say that it's true.
You are correct.
All right.
After a particularly long session, my assistant engineer's girlfriend came by in a bad mood. Never one to miss recording a take, Ryan recorded audio of their breakup, immediate reconciliation, and ensuing 5-minute makeout session.
Wow. So, and this was, I can't ask you questions about it before I make my guess, I suppose.
You can ask me some questions.
Yeah. Well, no, they're pretty specific. So I'm just gonna say, geez. I'm gonna say it's true.
Oh, it is false. Fuck. That did not happen.
Oh, I like that story.
Hardcore band Evergreen Terrace wanted to do a cover of the Simpsons theme song. When we told them they couldn't do it unless they already had arrangements made with whomever owns the copyright, they tried trashing the room. The singer almost immediately tripped on an XLR cable, fell to the ground, and had to go to the hospital. We still didn't let them cover the Simpsons.
I'm going to say that one is true.
That is false.
Oh.
That is false.
I got to be honest. I wasn't listening for half of that. I'm getting out of Ryan here. I'm starting to wonder about your
Dennis
liquor cabinet.
Dennis, get back in.
Okay, I gotta focus again.
On the Parwana EP, Flowers for Algernon, there's an acoustic track called Penguins for Profit about the Teapot Dome scandal that includes both a vacuum cleaner and someone smacking their bare ass.
Well, it's absurd. There's nothing new under the sun, so I'm going to say it's true.
That is true.
All right.
All right, last one. If you get this, you win. If you don't, you lose. It'll be
tied. The stakes couldn't be higher. All right.
This is important. This means something.
Okay.
All right. Local math rock band Struction made it through 6 of their...
False. Because you are obsessed with math rock.
That is fake.
Yes!
Shoot, comrade Stalin. Who's the job
Today we have Ken Rutkowski from Outer Limit Recording Studio. Ken, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Hope everything goes well.
So, like, I think half of our guests that we've had on the podcast have mentioned you by name. So we thought you'd be a great guy to talk to, and your recording studio is absolutely gorgeous. So thank you for hosting us.
Thank you.
Yeah, we just got a tour from Ken. So you've, part of his curriculum vitae, is that how you say it? Is that he's worked with Eminem, D12, and lots of other Western musicians. If you're a Western New York musician listening to this, there's a pretty good chance that you worked with Ken. I didn't even work with him, and somehow I know him, just like...
We do know each other.
Just like, yeah, just somehow, like, secondhand. So the big picture about Outer Limit, Ken, if you could... What is the kind of stuff that you do here? Like, it's a recording studio, obviously. Just tell us briefly about the whole operation.
You know what? I have a lot of experience with a ton of different types of music, so everybody comes here. Every style, not every single person in the universe, but every style. I get, of course, rock and country and jazz. I get a ton of rap. Everybody has a ton of rap because the pool of talent is so gigantic, and rap is so big right now. I get some more obscure stuff. I get voiceover work. I get French horn auditions for college. I get little girls doing karaoke songs for grandma. Just about everything there is. Because I have experience in so many things, anybody that walks in the door, I can handle pretty well.
So pretty much, yeah, pretty much any genre.
Yep. Haven't had Lesbian Zydeco yet. I'm waiting for that one.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I know someone who's looking for a studio.
All right, good.
Might have made a connection. Well, you gave us a little tour, so you showed us all the recording space, but there was also, I was kind of interested in the back, you had some space that people could come to if they get to, like, to finish their beats and to take an educational program on recording music. Tell us about that.
Well, it's not necessarily on recording. That's for creating beats. Tons of rappers want to learn how to produce their own beats instead of either stealing them off the internet or buying them from somebody else. They want to learn how to do their own.
It's not general music. It's focused on beat production.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's a whole separate room in the back. That's a much lower rate than the whole studio. They can learn how to do a basic beat, how to learn how to use all the gear back there, and then according to their own knowledge, they figure out how to make those beats their own beats and make them what they need.
Right,
to flow
give them enough of a twist so that it's like original to them and it's not just something canned.
Exactly.
Hmm. So, is there any story behind the name Outer Limit?
Not a fantastic one. I had a business partner years and years ago. 25 years we've been in business. Well, it's now I because I bought out my partner a few years ago. Craig and I started the studio, and naming a business or a band or a child is probably the most difficult thing you can do. I mean,
question quiz that I have about obscure trivia to the 1963 television show The Outer Limit probably isn't going to go over that.
Nope. Somebody give me a pack of trading cards from that show and a bottle of shampoo that's labeled Outer Limit, and I have those around somewhere because it's funny. But Craig was his name, a good friend still, just not in the business. He was interested in space and things like that, and I believe the name of the show did come up, but it just seemed like Outer Limit. Ooh, take your music to the Outer Limit. And, maybe a little corny, but that's really all it came from. Nothing too significant.
Cool. It stuck. So tell us about Eminem being in here, right? We got to get to Eminem.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That was a pretty cool thing. His management called out of the blue, didn't know anything was coming up, didn't know they would be in town or anything.
And when was this?
A thousand years ago now. This was the beginning of the Anger Management Tour. I'd have to look it up. Don't know exactly. Probably 12 years ago or so. So they called and said, we'd like to see if bringing in one of our artists is going to work with you guys. Perhaps you've heard of him. His name is Eminem. And at that point, I'm thinking, this could be a joke.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
In case it's not, I should play along with it. So I put on my game face, and I said, absolutely. If you guys would like to come in for a tour or see anything about us, we can do that. And they did. A couple of managers came in, took a look around, and said, this is going to work real well. We'll have Eminem and D12. We'll have some managers and things like that. Turned out they had... bouncers, gigantic bouncers to keep everything right. They came in every morning in three giant black Escalades, and we had the deal. They told us right up front.
The neighbors looking at it, because this is kind of a residential section of Cheektowaga.
Yeah, probably were. We didn't hear anything, but they told us early on, if anybody knows about this, deal's off. They wanted it to be completely private. They didn't want there to be 500 people out front screaming for autographs and things like that.
Right.
So we couldn't tell anybody. I had to cancel some clients, but I couldn't tell them why until afterward, and then they all said, well, why didn't you invite us in. I'm like, couldn't have done that.
It doesn't work that way.
right. So
amazing. How'd the session go?
It went great. Eminem was not the sometimes jerk that you think of him. You kind of think he's kind of mean, kind of whatever. But he came in. He's all business. He wasn't sunshine and puppy dogs, but he wasn't a jerk. He walked in. He said, hey, how you going? How's it going? I'm Marshall. Let's get to work. And we did. Now D12, they're a bunch of clowns, especially Bizarre. That's what he's all about. So they're joking
like they're
around.
Like little clowns, like they.
Well, they're a little more boisterous
like
and things like that.
So
their juggling needed work, but other than that, they were. So it lasted like four
Their personality
they're very boisterous and loud. That's okay. All. I mean, nothing destructive or anything like that. And
they all fit into one Escalade.
Oh, okay. One of those there.
Yes. But one of the days between all the bouncers and managers, Escalade. There were 25 of us in the studio. And luckily, I have 10 rooms here. So a couple of people were hitting the PlayStation. A few people playing cards in one room. There were three or four of us in here. They were all spread apart.
Yeah. And it worked out real well.
It was 4 8- to 10-hour days. So they were here for a lot of time.
For bands coming in. Mm-hmm. What kind of tips do you have? Like, if I'm coming to the recording studio for the first time and we're going to do 5 tracks, mm-hmm. what should I do to prepare myself for what the studio is going to be like?
There's nothing, of course, more important than practicing. Getting all your gear right is another thing. You don't want to have to spend 35 minutes getting the snare to sound good when you could have done that outside mm-hmm. instead of in here. Or worse yet, settling for a snare that doesn't sound good and hoping it can be mixed in later to sound good. We should absolutely be concentrating on music in here, not on fixing things that could have been fixed earlier. So having your stuff practiced, practice to a click. Always practice to a metronome, unless it's one of the songs that just is not going to be to a metronome. A lot of time changes or it's going to slow down and speed up. Mm-hmm. But practicing to a metronome is incredibly important. I've had many times...
Can you say that one more time for our drummer?
Can you use
our drummer's name, Rick Poor?
Someone asked me that question. Uh-huh. Playing to a click is the first thing I tell them.
It makes things so much easier. We can take that one good chorus part that the drummer did, paste it over to the other one, and the other did, or the bass, or the singer, whatever. We can paste things around so much more easily.
Right,
we can
we
can take out 2 bars over here, put them over there, and it keeps everything right on. I've had disagreements with many band members when we play to a click. Halfway through the song, like, oh, your click is speeding up. No, chances are the click is not speeding up. Right. But when you practice together as a band, undoubtedly you speed up and you slow down, you're doing it together as a group, so it doesn't feel like or sound like you're speeding up. But once you play to that click, you have to be able to play exactly to it, and, you know, it'll be uncomfortable for a little while, but let's let it be comfortable in your practice space and not here.
So have you ever taken isolated vocal tracks home from the studio to make your friends laugh at parties, like some other engineers have admitted to doing on our podcast?
Maybe.
Well, yeah. Sometimes I have
some
clients.
That's where I know you from. I remember now.
Yeah, I have some clients that have become very close, and they expect to hear some stories about things that have been done in the studio between last time they were here and this. And yeah, I get some crazy things. I get some crazy phone calls. I've had a person call and say simply, no hello, no I'd like to record, just, hey, do it cost anything to record there? Well, yeah, it does.
Kinda.
I had one the other day. I don't know if this is interesting to anyone but me, but a guy called and he left a message. He said, I'm wondering if you... He kind of paused a lot and breathed. He said, I'm wondering if you have, like, a studio or a booth. I'm willing to rap. My mother and I... let me just get down to it. I need money. My mother and I got scammed. It's BS. So call me back. So the two things that stood out about that were that he was willing to, finger quote, lower himself to, he was willing to rap.
Yeah.
Like, I'm willing to take out the garbage. You know, right? That he apparently thinks that the way to make money and the way that all musicians make money is just you go to the studio and then you get paid right away.
Right. And that's another thing keeping everybody from riches is that they aren't willing to just go ahead and do it.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So I find it interesting on kind of a tangential topic that people out in the real world who aren't in music like we are and like your listeners probably are, mm-hmm. they don't understand that there are people who record and never make it. They just assume that the only people on the radio or on iTunes or out there are the only people who do music.
Right, those are the ones who tried.
They don't understand that probably 99% of the people that do music don't make it there.
Yeah, that's actually a lot of, you know, what we deal with on our podcast here is talking about that entire stratum of people who do it just because they love it and they're not like trying to necessarily, I mean, would any of us say, no, please don't make me famous? Probably not. But that's not the only thing that there is to it. And a lot of the way that, like, music and the pursuit of music is portrayed in popular media is all, like, everybody's just, like, gambling for this one big shot. Well, there's a lot of people who are doing it, you know, the foot soldiers of
for
rock.
Fun, for fun, for enjoyment, to give it to other people. I had a client tell me once, he used to golf. He traded it for this. His wife knows that this is his hobby. He loves to do it. He said, I have no, same as you said, I wouldn't cry if somebody tried to give me money for it, but he said, this is what I do for fun. I love it.
Right. So how has the age of home recording affected your business?
I'm
stealing Ryan's question.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think what it does is it prepares people better to come in here and have it done right. I have people that occasionally think they're just going to make something as good as a real studio can make it at home. And, you know, in certain kinds, I mean, if you're doing production, if you're trying to do a beat, you need a laptop and you need a really, really good brain, of course, and maybe a keyboard. But things have been done like that. But to record a drum set, to record real instruments, really, really difficult slash impossible to do it at home and have it sound like it needs to. But people who record at home are really, really ready to come in here and do it right. It's kind of a sketchpad as an artist. And those are the people who are in here and they're just ripping through things, getting things done in a tiny amount of time compared to people who don't have that experience at home or that ability at home, and they do it better and cheaper.
Yeah, what do you think is hardest about doing it at home and expecting great results? Is it like is it the nicely treated rooms?
Mostly that. Yeah. That's probably 75% of it.
I do notice when I record a lot of vocals at home, and you know, most of the time, even you know what's coming out of my mouth notwithstanding, you can hear that you know, there's reflections and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I tell people sometimes when we stand in the most highly treated room in here that you guys experienced a few minutes ago, where it really feels like pillows are over your heads, that is a big, big reason that the music out on the radio, on iTunes, everywhere else, sounds like it does. I could take the whole rack of gear that's next to me and my best mic and my best experience and put you guys in the kitchen and have you play great music, and it would still sound awful. It would scream amateur. It's the room is a giant, giant part of it. Now, once the room is taken care of, then we deal with all of the things that I know I can fix, and knowing exactly what I can fix, I need to know how far to push you guys, anybody in front of the mic, to get it to the point where it's going to be something that I can take care of. I want to do it in the most efficient way as far as time is concerned. Now I could push you to get that right in another 309 takes, or I can get one that's pretty damn good in 4, and I know I can fix it later to make it sound just as good.
That's what engineers do with me.
Right.
Like,
and
you can either sing till kingdom come, or I can just open up the pitch shifter right now.
And I don't want to make it sound fake, and I don't want to make it in any way. I just know that I can make something sound exactly like you want it to sound with a lot less work.
Yo, this is AJ Jordan the Crescendo, and you're listening to The Struggle Is Real, Buffalo Music Podcast, on all WNYNews.com.
Perfect. The djembe?
How you guys doing?
Good, man. What's up?
All
right.
Oh, conga's okay. Love me a good djembe, personally.
I can't tell the difference when it's in a bag.
Yeah, well, that's why I guessed and got it wrong.
Yeah, well, see what happens. Took a chance.
So today we have, they just walked in the door. We have Kenny Hawkins, an amazing guitar player from the area, and we're doing some auxiliary percussion. He brought in a guy whose name, unfortunately, right now I don't know, but he's been putting some congas down. And Kenny brought him in. He's going to be wowing me with some incredible hands and talent on those instruments.
Oh, great.
Sweet. So how long have you been recording in Buffalo?
I've moved from one studio to another, but the one that we started out at, it was a little over 25 years ago. It's been a long time.
So you've obviously seen the Buffalo music scene evolve over time. What have you seen change over the years?
Probably the biggest change, and I don't know if it's really an evolution in Buffalo music, the biggest thing is that hip-hop has become a bigger part of every studio's repertoire, and mainly because the cost of doing a hip-hop song, as I said a little bit earlier, is just so much less. A band has to get together not only the money to record all that stuff, but three or four or five really good players who all have the same vision, find the right schedule that works into their schedule, my schedule, and mom and dad's schedule, or mm-hmm. depends on how young they are. There are a lot of things that have to line up. And hip-hop, you need to find an hour and find a beat mm-hmm. and learn some and come in. So I think the percentage of hip-hop has greatly, greatly risen. As far as talent in Buffalo, there's this is not exactly what you're asking, but it's phenomenal.
Okay.
There are Buffalo, I don't know, not a lot of people know this, but there are a lot of Buffalo musicians who fly out to all kinds of other cities and play on so many different things. Buffalo is a big talent pool, especially in the, like Kenny Hawkins, who I just mentioned. He and all of his cohorts, Jerry Livingston and Flute and DP, some drummers that he has, they're always going someplace to play for somebody, and it's you've probably
heard. Yeah, so you don't necessarily always see it here, but we are exporting folks
to
other projects.
Yeah, you've probably heard a ton of them and not known it at all.
So I saw the disclaimer under your website's email button. Please do not contact us if you're an artist looking to get signed. Understand that we are not a record label and cannot sign you, end quote. Is that a typical request, and has that kind of inquiry completely stopped since you put up the 6-point font notice?
Six, is that what it was?
Around there.
I get a lot of people like that phone call that I alluded to earlier, or explained earlier. You know, a lot of people think, hey, you call and it's a label and you're going to get signed and you're going to get rich. And it's
right,
not the way I work.
La Bamba or something.
Right. I don't get too many calls about it. That's just one more way to say, not that I don't like you. It's not that I don't think you're good. It's just not what I do.
Right. You just want to make it clear from the get-go.
Right.
Maybe avoid having that awkward conversation even once.
Right. And people do ask in here sometimes, why don't you become a label?
Start a label, yeah.
Yeah.
And everybody's starting labels these days.
They are. And the big problem I have with that is not everybody's good enough to make, finger quotes again, the Outer Limit label, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have to tell 6 or 10 or 2,000 people, nope, you're not good enough. I just don't have that.
I like the ring of that, the Outer Limit label.
sure. My job as I see it is not to make everybody great, because not everybody has it in them to be great. My job is to make everybody the best that they can be,
mm-hmm,
and even better than they dreamed they could be. I can take somebody who's terrible, and sometimes terrible people walk in the door, but if I can make them sound good, they're thrilled. They're giving me hugs.
Yeah.
I've had people cry because they're so happy that they didn't know they could sound that good.
That's great.
I can take somebody who's average and make them sound really good, and I can take somebody who's spectacular and make them absolutely out of this world.
Mm-hmm.
That's my job. I had to go through a little bit of a moral dilemma very early on, because every studio gets some people who just are not cut out. Like,
maybe
you should try painting,
Mm-hmm.
But it's not my job to make them great, because sometimes it can't happen, as I said. But it is, as I said also, it's my job to make them better.
Yeah.
But, at first I was thinking, maybe I'm just stealing money from this guy because he can't go anywhere. But, again, that's not what they're paying me for. They're paying me to make them the best they can.
Yeah, and also to have that experience.
Yeah.
And, like you said, maybe just to give it to some of their friends or something.
Right.
Like the recording they made. And
say,
I accomplished this.
Now, there was one occasion where I had a woman in who was... Just didn't have a voice. She just wasn't born with a good voice at all. Not on pitch, no good timbre to her voice, just wasn't. And she did a song or two just to warm up. And I talked to her for a while. She said, yeah, I've been to a few studios, and then I got some background on her. And I said, let's record one. And we went through for 15 minutes, not too long. And I said to her, you know what? Let's sit down and talk for a minute. And we had a heart-to-heart talk, and I ended up kind of slowly breaking it to her. I don't think this is your thing. Some people are born with it, some people are not, and I just don't think I just don't think you are.
Yeah.
She hugged me, she cried, and she said, thank you so much. I've been to 4 studios. I've spent hundreds and hundreds of dollars, and they just keep taking my money. And she said, I'm going to look for something else to do. She appreciated the honesty.
She had made it clear to you that she was in it for commercial success, so you kind of gave her the straight dope at that point. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So sometimes you have to be the producer and just be able to tell someone a take or a song, something sucks.
Yeah, maybe just be like a human being, too.
Yeah,
people know me around here as kind of being the Simon Cowell without the jerk.
Right.
Because I'm going to give it to them honestly. I mean, there's always something good about everybody who comes in. Sometimes I break it to people like...
They're Cowell-esque biceps.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Sometimes I might say to somebody, man, your lyrics are really good. I like how you're delivering them. We just have to work on your pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm not lying. I'm just telling them, it's not like I want to tell anybody, you suck. Let's do this over.
Right, but there's a certain number of things that people expect when they hear a song that's going to be popular. And
right.
You like to, if the artist maybe isn't aware of those things, how to hit those points. Mm-hmm. You can help.
Yeah, and I don't want to crush anybody either. I'm a frail, fragile musician. I get knocked down easily. So, you know, everybody has at least a little bit of that in them. So mm-hmm. I don't want to make somebody self-conscious. I don't want to tell them something's terrible without first saying, you know what, this part, this is awesome. You're hitting me in the heart with your lyrics, for instance.
Yeah.
But in order to be commercial where you want to be, we've got to make sure that whatever, your voice, you know, hits those big, mm-hmm. big parts so that when people hear it, they're moved emotionally, not just by lyrics. Or, you know, maybe you ought to think about making your lyrics a little more accessible to people, but your delivery is fantastic. Or,
mm-hmm, sure.
you know, the chorus that happens six times in the beginning of your song, that might be a little too much.
Oh, that's cool. I appreciate that little bit of, like, production advice, too. Like,
sure.
that's
oh,
yeah. actually...
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, some people will make it clear, hey, this is what I do, don't need any help. It's very rare, but sometimes mm-hmm. they will. Most people are very appreciative, especially, like I said,
right.
if you couch it in, here's the great you're doing.
Supportive terms,
let's
yeah.
try
oh, absolutely.
To make it a little more. You know,
yeah.
and I make it clear, too, that I'm not just going for what I like. You know, you might be recording, I don't like country, for instance, don't like country music,
mm-hmm.
but I can record it great, and I can help people get where it needs to go because I don't have to like it. I just have to make it more
yes.
commercial. I have to take it in the way that they and or their music is kind of, telling it to go.
Headed,
music dictates. Once you get the framework, it kind of dictates where it wants to go, and
yeah.
I want to help get it there.
I find, you know, and I think you'd say the same, I think the best kind of engineer is the one who realizes that this recording isn't just, you know, an image of what the band is. It's an image of what your studio is, too.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to make sure,
sure
you're using your brain to get that positive message out that, you know, you don't want... If you release a whole bunch of, you know, garbage that
right.
sounds unproduced...
Well, that's what I was saying.
Come back.
Yeah, that's
so,
why I'm saying everybody wins. You know,
yeah.
they win, the music world wins, I win, everybody wins if we make it the absolute best project it can be in every way.
Yeah.
So we're running a little tight on time. I just wanted to ask you one
yes.
more question. So... I went to college for music industry. It was a combination mm-hmm. of business and engineering and performance. And, you know, I think I felt like going in as a freshman, it was like, all right, I'm going to go here. I'm going to get a job at a studio. Everything's going to be great. But I found as I graduated that there are far more applicants for positions than there are positions open. So how many resumes would you say you get in, like, a month?
Not a tremendous amount, but, yeah, a couple at least.
Oh, okay.
You know, two, three, maybe four. And I went to college for a similar thing. Went to Fredonia. They didn't have a business program at the time, so it was performance and it was recording.
Yeah.
It was a four-year degree called the Tonemeister program. Very, very in-depth musically. And I say that because the most important thing, maybe your next question was going to be, what can I do as an emerging college student? Music is far more important than the technical side. I can teach people that this button means this, and moving this does this, and moving this dial does this. But if you don't have an ear for it, or if you don't know the difference between major and minor, or sharp and flat, or 86 beats a minute and 24 beats a minute, that's tougher to teach. You know, you need
yeah.
a college education for that. I get tons of people who have... I've had, let me put it this way, I've probably had 20 interns who reached the end of their internship because they could not do the musical things, but they could do the technical things.
Right.
Far more important. And the easiest way to do it is to make sure you take a piano course. Piano teaches you
yes.
notes. Piano teaches you keys. Piano teaches the difference between major and minor. You know, all the things you need.
Yeah, all the fundamentals.
Can you reading my mind?
Yeah, this becomes so much more important, especially these days when 30 years ago, 60 years ago, you had somebody play until the project was great. And that was it. These days, you have somebody play because of time constraints and because of just the way recording works now, and because computers do what they do, you have people play until it's pretty damn good, or pretty good, or sometimes as good as they can make it, and then it's up to me and all my gear to make it sound great. So that puts the onus on the engineer to know when a pitch needs to change, or a rhythm needs to change,
yeah.
or it needs to be said differently, spoken differently, sung differently, rapped differently, whatever. So music training is far more important than anything else when going through your training.
Yeah, great.
That,
well,
is,
become an
engineer. That is fantastic advice.
Yeah, and gratifying to hear, being a musician.
Yes,
yes, absolutely. Dennis, do you have anything else?
No,
you wanna...
we could talk to you forever. We
yeah.
know you got some folks
it
waiting already.
It is fun.
Already,
I'm sorry that
so.
I have sessions coming up next. So
yeah,
I'm
no, that's okay. Thank you so much for your time and generosity, giving us a tour through the studio.
Yeah,
and
welcome, guys.
And
it's gorgeous here. Like, if you're looking for a place to record locally, the It's I felt comfortable walking in, and you walk into the isolation booth, and you can just hear the any of that echo, that room sound, just getting sapped right out of the room as soon as you walk in. And it's big. It's got room to spread out. It's got a Zen room in the back and a place for a PlayStation. And no, I think this place is awesome. I definitely recommend it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks again very much.
You're welcome, guys. You're welcome. We're shaking hands now.
Yes.
All right. Shaking hands. Right.
It seems like the right thing to do, right?
It does. Just,
yeah, generally.
All right. Well, that was Mr. Ken Rutkowski. We want to thank him again for giving us his time. In 2 weeks, we will be back with episode 10, where we will have singer, songwriter, all-around Buffalo badass, and 2017 Buffalo Music Hall of Fame inductee, Allison Pipitone, to the Struggling Studios.
Yes, very excited about that. So don't forget to visit Ken online at OuterLimitRecordingStudio.com. Check us out and all of our compatriots, our big family, on allwnyradio.com. There's great programming there, including streaming web radio of all local music. So some of that original music you heard Ryan talking about earlier is featured there. There's blog reviews. Ryan writes on there. There's podcasts by Think So Joe. There's Corey McKnight is on there. And if you're wondering if there's a podcast that combines politics and photography, my friend, there is. It's called The Big Picture with Michael Sargent. You don't want to miss that. You can check us out on Facebook, facebook.com, The Struggle Is Real Podcast, and Twitter at SIRPodcastNY. And Ryan is on Twitter tweeting irresponsible things, which will incite riots, at Sir William Idle. And I am on Twitter, but don't even bother looking because it's not worthwhile. Because I never tweet shit.
Yeah, I agree.
And if you want to be featured on The Struggle Is Real, you got a story to tell, you got a perspective on music and the life of being a DIY musician in the 716, hit us up.
Yeah, and any comments or questions, we don't get a lot, so, you know, send us a question, maybe we'll read it on the air.
And
if it's a mean criticism of Dennis, I will absolutely read it on the air.
I can't imagine those coming in, but we will also settle your band disputes.
Yes.
So if you have a band dispute, we'll take care of it for you. We'll be an independent arbiter, and we will apply band law expertly.
Yes, Judge Ryan Gurnett with Bailiff Dennis Reed Jr.
Yes.
All right, well, for Dennis Reed Jr., I am Ryan Gurnett, and this has been the Struggle Is Real Music Podcast. Keep struggling.
You should get some ink, I'm noticing, on your... for a second, the wire was kind of hanging around your arm a little bit. It looked pretty fucking rad. You look pretty, like, beefy. You were scary for a second.
I'm scared of needles, but if we ever wanted to...
Like some temporary tattoos, we'll get... We should do temporary tribals for our next show.
I think we should make video of me getting a tattoo.
A real tattoo?
Absolutely.
Okay. I'm down with that.
Yeah, screw it.
Upper thigh? Like a peanut... Get a peanut up there.
I was hoping to get Haley Joel Osment from The Sixth Sense on my inner thigh.
What is that? I don't know what that is.
The I See Dead People kid.
Why would you put him there?
I think it's where he belongs.
I will definitely pay for that.